Hello, everyone, and welcome to this very special episode of Soroka Speaks. I am Emily.
And it's Claire.
And we are joined today by the very inspirational spiritual leader, activational speaker, and all around just very intriguing and inspiring human, Mr. Kevin Walton. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Hello. Thank you for having me. It's an honor. It's an honor to be here.
Great. It's an honor to have you with us. And Kevin, what would you say is important for people to know about you before we dive in here?
I would say, to add on the initial intro, that I'm the designer and kind of founder of a practice that I call Creatorhood. It's an operating system, it's a spiritual practice and a life path. And it's a massive dedication to supporting us evolve as a species. If there's something I wanted to really like hit home is I'm here to support our evolution and build a civilization that continues to live more from truth, that remembers the truth in us. And Creatorhood is a way of offering a greater awareness of all that is available to us and how everything's designed to function, and then how we are wielding that in aligned or misaligned way, and in a conscious way or unconscious way. And so then from that, I founded a ministry called the Life Beings Ministry as a steward of this practice and in community development of the Life Beings community too, so that we start creating containers that represent this embodiment to life.
Beautiful. Recently, I saw you post something on your Instagram around for your mom's birthday. She was asking for, I think it was donations to like a meditation center or something of the sort. And it got me curious about your origin story, of which I know nothing about, and wondered if your mom had anything to do with that. Tell us a little bit about how did you get involved in, you know, I'm sure it's probably lifetimes in the making. How did you get involved? Like, how did the spiritual path call to you? And what's a little bit of your origin story there?
Short form, when I was young, I was tapping into things. I had no concept of what to make of it. And so I didn't pay it much mind, but I would like, you know, see visions and hear voices and tap into things that made no sense to me as a kid. Years later, when I was like late teens, it started kind of kicking on heavy again. And I had a couple of friends where we would talk about like ancient civilizations and UFOs and all that stuff. So it kind of sparked more of these insights in me. And my mom noticing the journey I was on of starting to like explore what this was, she really just encouraged me to like, she sent me and gifted me these books to read to see if any of this spoke to the things I was tapping into. And the first, you know, set she gave me was Conversations with God, which I thought was a great read. And it was tapping into certain things, but still wasn't the full scope of what I was experiencing and accessing. And then she put me on to Seth Speaks. And that was the first time I'd come across anything that was speaking verbatim what I was experiencing and to the degree in depth I was experiencing it. And so it was the first time where I was like, oh, I'm not crazy. I'm not crazy. This is a thing. And so that sparked my conscious dedication to whatever this access is that I have, I'm all in. And I kind of just opened up the gates to that. And it was like a waterfall effect where just things came rushing in. And it was an interesting journey of navigating these insights that were far bigger than the way I was thinking at the time or what I had considered of myself. And so there's a lot of inner conflict initially between accessing these insights and this idea of who I thought I was and what I was going to do in my life. And that was a journey to navigate that and all these different profound experiences and still tapping into these insights and having visions and tapping into different dimensional things. And so it was a really interesting journey. And when I started to really experiment with this access so that I could understand more of what it is experientially, that's where it started to form into something where my life started changing. The way I thought started to match this access, the way I started perceiving things started matching this access. And people started to take notice. And so they were like, what are you doing? What's happening with you? What, you know, because of the changes. And I just started sharing. And I wasn't really shy about sharing, even in college, when I was extra kind of misaligned revolutionary. But I wasn't as dialed into the truth of the insights to understand. So I'm glad I matured out of that. And so as I kept sharing, it led to me, you know, feeling this calling to really spread more of it. It was just more kept coming through and it felt way too massive for me to just contain. And then I just started sharing more, and that's what prompted me to start doing the groups. And then that led to me forming the actual practice and developing how to take all these concepts and pour it out and figure out how to structure it and all of that. And just, it was a genuine organic evolution of the access into embodiment, into structural offering and to facilitating and teaching. And I didn't see my life going in this direction. It was a genuine like, oh, this is a calling and this is clearly something I'm here to do. And this is something, and every time I actually did, I could feel my energy increase and then more wisdom and more things understood. And it was been a wild journey. And that would be a short form. It was a lot of fascinating things along the way, but that's how I would sum it up to some degree. Yeah.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I can resonate with the feeling of, you know, I did my coach training just as a means for my own personal growth when I was 30. And it was like, oh, this is what I'm supposed to be doing with my life. And now here we are 13 years later and, you know, running Soroka. And so, yeah, it's a beautiful thing when we can support ourselves and each other to come into alignment and be working on purpose.
Yeah.
So you and I know each other through Sacred Sons, of which if any of our listeners have listened to one of our recent episodes from Power Struggles to Sacred Union, you will have heard me share a little bit about this journey that I went on at the beginning of September this year, 2025. And that's where I officially met Kevin, but I've been following you for a few years. I think I remember because my sister is friends with Adam. So I remember kind of coming into like following Sacred Sons really early on. I think there were like 6,000 followers or something. So it's been really, really awesome to watch the journey. How did you get involved with that organization of which you are now one of the leaders?
It really from the beginning, actually, a woman I was dating at the time connected me to Abir, who's one of the original founders with Adam and J-Mac. And we had a conversation just to get to know each other. And he told me what the idea of what they were forming. And I showed with him what I do and everything foundational basis wise, my practice is for everybody. I facilitate men, women, co-ed spaces all the time, even, kids spaces and stuff. But I also have dedicated focuses in women's containers and in men's containers. And so we just had a conversation about what they were planning and is there a space to weave and collaborate? And so we kind of broke some of that down and I could see where we could sync up. The first convergence, the dates they established, I had already had an event booked that I was facilitating in South Carolina that weekend, which is the only reason I wasn't at the first convergence. Right after that first convergence, we formed the men's kind of coaching containers that they brought me in immediately to be one of the leaders of and facilitators of. So I stepped in leadership to support the organization and what I had to offer, and then have been I was at every event ever since in terms of the convergences and then more EMXs and offering what I did in the container to help form what we were building. So I've been there from the early stages in leadership in it. But after the first kind of those coach containers and first events, we started to really understand how to weave and fuse where I fit into it as a leader. And I've been with Rockin' ever since and been supporting it ever since and representing it ever since.
And we're so glad that you are.
I appreciate it.
What was the process like when you all decided to, so Remembrance, the gathering that I was at this year was the second annual, and it was the second time that you'd opened the container up to the feminine. What was that process like in terms of deciding like how and why you wanted to, do something that sort of encompassed both sides of the spectrum?
Well, part of the vision had always been getting to the place where we could set up some co-ed stuff within the Sacred Sons container. We talked about it very early on, but we wanted to really form what this was going to be for the men first, obviously, and what we were building as community. But with the idea of that, and there was actually a moment where early on we did a virtual, while we had an in-person convergence, we did a virtual form of it that was co-ed. I thought it was a little too early for it, honestly. And it weaved well. It offers some spaces, but I thought that there's just certain things structurally I would have liked to have more in place before we got there. But it offered what it did for the moment. And then we had continued to speak about it going forward and seeing when would be the time. And then when Adam, kind of got the inspiration after his daughter was born, he was like, man, this could be the time. We could just go for it. And so we talked about it and he thought because convergence was coming into nine, I personally, my expression was keep convergence, and let's establish Remembrance as Remembrance from the start. And what we ended up doing was doing Remembrance over convergence, which it still worked out. It was beautiful, but it was kind of like it was the time coming. We could feel that calling and acting on the inspiration to take this step forward. And then, but the intention was always for it to be its own event. So we then had this co-ed container within the Sacred Sons. And so it's been something that's been on the radar from the beginning that we finally took action on in the space for that.
I'm endeavoring to inspire Claire to come next year. Maybe.
Yeah. I saw the change in Emily when she came back and was just like, where did you go? What was this event? This is something that I had never seen before or heard about before. I hope that it becomes international. Let's throw that out there.
For sure. I got to do it.
I'm interested to ask you about, because you mentioned obviously you work with men and women and children mm-hmm. as well. And I wondered where sort of how your work is sort of communicated to children. And also just knowing what I know about Sacred Sons, which is quite limited, you know, there is so much work that can be done. I'm raising teenagers, as is Emily's preteen. You know, what is your work like? And is there an evolution, you know, in Sacred Sons for children, or is that just for adults? I just wanted to ask, pick your brains a little bit.
Yeah, so in regards to the mention on the Sacred Sons container, so we actually had a few, one of our dear brothers, Trevor, had established a Sacred Sons youth for a few years. And then he had a different idea of where, how he wanted to evolve it and take it. So he kind of branched off and then formed it with a few other Sacred Sons brothers that formed it into, it's called Roots. I gotta remember what it is. But there's a form of that. So we actually did establish one for teenagers for a few years. And we still want to build more of that in Sacred Sons. And I'll get the Instagram of Trevor's youth program and send it your way so you have it. It's a really, really beautiful thing. And there, what they formed, because even when it was Sons Youth initially, it was really beautiful and the care and dedication to it. And we even in Sacred Sons, part of the dedication was making sure that this initial thing for the men would also translate to having something for the youth so we can create proper rites of passage and developmental stages for the youth. And that's also what I'm dedicated to forming within communities that we develop. So even in like Light Beings and the Creatorhood world is dedicated to that. And so being able to translate this for the youth, and I even have a bunch of friends here because I have a teenager as well. My son's 14 and he was kind of my guinea pig early on of exploring how to teach Creatorhood to kids and what lands, and a few of my other friends' kids, which I'm grateful for. And so it was really cool to explore how they receive information, how they tap into some of the experiences and to create more of the, because, you know, children are far more tactile. And so being able to weave that with them and even with their a lot of energy, because I've even had like children clients that the parents would hire me for to help them train them to know how to harness their focus more if they were, you know, diagnosed ADHD. And so it's because it's just a muscle to flex and knowing how to train children to tap into their ability to command their energy. And even like teaching meditation where I'd have them sit and I'll say, how still can you be in silence and just be here for a second? And then I'll say, now get up and go run really fast. And they get up and run, and then they come back and sit back down again, and they just be. And the more we do that, we start getting them to tap in, you know, these things and feeling sensations and a lot of different things that bring them into a greater lens of life around them. And then also how to tap in understanding emotions, different facets like that. So there's a lot of, and then how to set this up. My next kind of focus and vision is how we'll set up programs that will be offered to each stage of a child's development that'll lead into like more progressive embodiment through each stage. So by the time they're a teenager, where they'll be embodied will be really powerful. And then we'll create certain rites of passage that we'll bring back for teenagers, for both men and women, for boys and girls.
We're just in time, Claire. Our kids are, we're just in time. We'll get them in right at the right time before it's too late. Okay, Kevin, you have this really interesting, I dare say perspective or belief, but for you, it's truth. And what is truth? So the loaded question, but let's dig a little deeper here. I want to get into a little bit of like, what is truth through your eyes? And also, you know, getting into some of the polarity, the masculine feminine dynamics. This is really where I think I want to hit today. But tell us a little bit about what is truth, according to Kevin Walton.
So truth, my definition of truth is the most accurate alignment of unified completion, the way I define that to be. So meaning that for something to be as fully unified in itself as possible. And the reason why I state that specifically is in a dimension that's physical, right? There's only so much capacity to how much truth can be held before it dissolves into the full bigness of truth. And so in the journey of us in physical reality, our journey is to live into the greatest magnitude of capacity that's available to us within this dimension of reality. And so defining in that way gives a lens of understanding for something to be truth, what does it entail, and then how does it hold as a framework? So if truth is the most accurate alignment of unified completion, that means that truth is the structure, the unwavering, unchanging structure that holds creation together as one. And in order for something to be truth, then it must be, and these are key functions in order for us to be able to identify something as truth. It must be universal. It must be all-inclusive. It must be in flow. It will represent what is the simplest and smallest thing, as well as the biggest and the greatest magnitude of a thing, which means it fractally applies in all spaces. Mm. So if something is, and so it's unchanging. So if something is true today, it was true yesterday, and it will be true tomorrow. If something is truth, it's true for me as much as it's true for you. If, you know, there's no specialized, like, well, no, this truth is for these people, but no one else gets that, right? Then we're not talking about truth. And so I'm really adamant then in that, as you heard in remembrance, there is no such thing as your truth or my truth, because the truth is not, it is not personalized to fit someone's narrative. Mm-hmm. It is the thing that holds all our narratives and reminds us what's the truth beyond the narrative and whether that narrative is actually in alignment with truth or not. And so the thing that, and I'm so adamant about that because of language, right? Like in creatorhood, I'm very precise with language, very specific. I have clear definitions for every word used in the practice because I'm that focused on ensuring there's clarity with everything offered, both in experience and in the insights. And so to then understand that, all things that operate in truth would operate in the harmony of life, which means it's always in the flow. So every time you're in flow, you're in truth. And so if we ever feel like we're forcing something or stagnant, something's off in that regard. And so truth is effortless. It's where the flow resides. And it is always upholding the greatest magnitude while honoring the smallest function. And that is then how the truth holds. So as an individual, instead of it being my truth or your truth, it's simply, this is how I honestly feel right now, but that will change. It's, this is my current perspective, but that will broaden. It's, this is what I'm currently feeling, but that will, you know, that'll move. This is what is most important to me. This is what I'm really passionate about. All of those things are there. But when someone takes that and goes, this is my truth, you're now taking something that does not change and holds consistently and shoving into a container that it is not only doesn't fit, it will obliterate the concept. And so the idea of truth and the way that I teach it for people to understand is how to recognize the thing that literally holds the all of creation and then lives in all of us. So that means that all of us represent our own unique expression of how the truth can be lived through us. Mm. But those key elements do not change for it to be truth.
Yeah, you really eliminate a lot of people's bullshit with this definition. Yeah.
100%. As the truth does. As the truth does. Eliminate bullshit. That's what it's designed to do. Yeah, if I could tell you how much the truth knocked me on my ass when I was on the journey of developing this practice and living these access, it was like this. Oh, all right, let's own that shit and make a change. And it just became this constant thing because it's that potent, but that's what helps hold the framework and not even not just hold it, but recognize it for ourselves. Because one of the biggest things in creatorhood that I start off the bat, whether it's offering it in a recorded course or an event or in CIT, one of the live trainings I offer, I start with getting everyone's reference point to shift to truth. Yeah. So that we all come back to the recognition of how to properly see, understand, and move in our lives from an adherence that will always stay the same. Hmm. Yeah, it's really powerful. Really powerful.
So how do you, so if I came to a session mm-hmm. and it was my first time, right, coming with you to the creatorhood, like how do you start leading or how do you get me to find out and hone in what is Claire's truth or what is Emily's truth, right? And is it a series of questions? Like dive a little bit deeper for me so that I can understand, because I think it sounds incredible and I'm like, okay, I want to, when am I next in the States and when am I coming? But it's, we're not, we're here online. So how does one start
online offering? Yeah. So the way I break it down as an initial offering that helps dispel the concept of your truth, right, or my truth, so that we, because that's literally what I start off with is, here's the framework of creatorhood. So you understand what you're getting into. Right. And then it goes, and then here is it because part of the tagline of creatorhood is I call it the art of living from truth. And that means that what it does is it gives you the science and the systems on how everything works structurally. And then the art is knowing which piece when in the journey of our lives. And so the way that we recognize that is by the things that are always the same and don't change. So when I start introducing the truth, after I break that down, then we go right into truth. I just start breaking down the mechanics of the nature of our lived experience. And so to take away from the, to fade the concept of Claire's truth or Emily's truth or Kevin's truth. And now it just comes to, here is the foundational function of creation. Here's how you're built. Here's what's alive in you. Here's how you can use it. Now let's look how you're using it. And so that we understand, am I actually functioning from this capacity or not? And then I'll break down personal experiences you have so that you understand how the truth is experienced in an example. And so, and even something as simple as if you in one instance feel insecure and you're not enough, and in another instance feel fully embodied and so confident, right? If one can change, then you understand that it's not the truth of you. But because the truth will always represent more the magnitude, then you'll always feel more embodied when you're living in truth. So then that's how we break down the energetics. So then I teach people with an exercise how you can actually tune into the sensations and the energetics of recognizing where truth is and where it's not. And what's wild is whenever I break down concepts that are truth-based, then people feel it, right? They can feel in their system like, oh, this is language to something I felt but didn't know how to describe. Or this is, and because we all know when we actually feel truth or when presented with it, even though sometimes we're not pleased about it if it disrupts ideas that we thought we had. And so early on, that's just how I break it down. So I offer the structural framework and then get people to recognize how it shows up in their lives so it can sink. And then what I do from there is break down one key aspect of truth in creation, which is life is designed to be lived comprehensively. So then we break down what it means to approach life and understand life from a comprehensive lens so that we can understand more of the way that the truth shows up in our lives in different areas. And so those are some of the fundamental things. And it's designed that way because I want the practice to be as confrontational as love is and as truth is. And so immediately we just go right into bringing this up like this and then start piecing together all the things that are involved in it. And that's how I introduce it.
Yeah. How do you distinguish truth from love?
Love is truth in action. So whenever we're living truth, like to live truth is to be embodied in love. And so the way that I break that down as, because if truth is the structural framework of unity holding all of creation, then love represents how that functions. And that's why my definition of love is the absolute acceptance of everything. So love lives in the recognition of honoring where we are and demanding us living into everything we're designed to be, the more of us. And so every time we're living in full self-acceptance, then we are now operating in truth because we're holding the full framework of us. So if here's where I made a decision that was out of integrity with my beingness and I feel shame. So love goes, awesome. Here's your shame. Face that. Now let's grab that energy and live into you functioning in integrity. And that's how love works. So love represents how truth is lived in action.
Beautiful, beautiful definition.
I'm mind blown with this. I absolutely love it because I'd never really heard this concept before, but it makes absolute sense. And I think, you know, what my takeaways as well from everything that you were saying was really about sort of, especially with the love, it's like, you know, love, it should be and is unconditional, right? Without the stories and the noise and that we tell ourselves, right? So if my husband does something and I'm like, well, he's done that because I've done that, or, you know, well, he spoke to me that way because I spoke to him this way, or there's a story that we tell ourselves. And I think when you remove that or you overcome that and go, hey, I'm so sorry I spoke to you that way. That was no way in relation to you. It's because I was not concentrating, or I was, you know, I fell over the cat or whatever. I'm having a bad day. And it's, which happens all the time. I do fall over.
Cats love to walk in front of people's feet. It's so real.
But I think when you remove that, it changes. It's like, okay, now we're back to being in integrity, and we're back to being in, not that we weren't out of love, but we remove all of that. And I think it really resonated with me. And I think it's so powerful, and people don't, so many of us don't go to this level of sort of exploration.
Exactly. Yeah, I appreciate that. And you said that important phrase, because love is unconditional. It is absolute. There is no such thing as separate love. There's no such thing as conditional love. That's not a real thing. Love only holds the magnitude of something. And so it's always the self-acceptance. And so then in the practice, I'll teach early on two key things that represent that for us. So the key three embodiments that represent us living in a state of love, the three mindset essentials that represent us living in love, that you'll know you're in it if these things are on. And so it's like we even break that down in the same way, so we know what we're touching on. And what you spoke to, one of them was ownership, is one of the mindsets where it's responsibility plus accountability. So I understand what role I play, what I'm responsible for, hold myself accountable to it. If I'm out of integrity with that, I own that, so I can come back to in proper accountability, so I can come back to being in that, being more purposeful and intentional in how I move, being open to all the possibilities, and then knowing what I prefer. All of these things are key facets that live in a state of love. And love, and then love is even then not even specialized. When we just have so many misconceptions of love that get taught in the world. And then people wonder why relationships are a shit show. And so the notion of it is love is the same in any relational container. What varies is the degree of which it's expressed according to the container. So the love I have for my family is the same love for my friends, the same love for my son, my parents, and then a romantic partner. But the difference is based on the identified association of relationship will determine to what degree is love expressed in vulnerability, intimacy that honors that container. And so it's the same love, but it's understanding how it's utilized accordingly. Yeah, so powerful. It changes.
Yeah. I heard a saying once that love is unconditional, but relationships are not. What would you say?
If they're not based in love. But I will say to that is, yeah, relationships, in order for relationships to weave properly, there has to be clarity of foundation, clarity of recognition, and standards and agreements. It's important to uphold that. But a relationship is not automatically based in love because people build relationships out of fear all the time. I don't want to be lonely, so I'm going to go get a partner because I don't know how to be with myself, which will mean that relationship will not be seated in love, right? It would be an avoidance of self through another person. Being able to understand then what's the difference. And one of the ways I teach it in the practice is understanding the difference between transaction and reciprocation, where there's nothing inherently misaligned with transaction. Certain relationships are built upon it, like business relationships, right? They're just proper agreements, transactional, but you can still have a business relationship built on love, which is just respect and consideration of self and others. But the transactions are an indicator of what it is. When you have a more personalized relationship or romantic, a parent-child, it's you want it built in reciprocation, which is it's always flowing in direct consideration of each other. And it's building off of energetic generation, not what can you do for me and me for you. That's transaction. So what makes the reciprocation love is I'm willing to give of myself, ideally from a healthy place for it to be love, right? From a considerate place, because love is not sacrifice. It's not at the cost of us. So I take care of myself to effectively play my role as a father to my son. Right. I don't do things for my son for him to pay me back.
Right.
Right. All right, son, I'm just accruing all this money I've been paying for your private school and your clothes and stuff. This is going to be coming. You got some bills. You got some invoices coming, right? It's I do this to take care of my son and encourage him to be more of who he's designed to be. And he doesn't owe me anything for that. But then I'm his father, so he loves me and adheres to me and we share a bond. It's reciprocal. But then there's transactions that can happen in a relational container. Like, Zen, Dad, I got these three things to do. Can you wash these dishes and start washing the dishes, you know, on a regular while you're here so I can navigate these things? I appreciate you. And then if it's, do you want to also earn some extra money before you do this thing? Let's build some things. But the relationship's not built on that. Mm-hmm. The relationship's built on reciprocation. So it's even those subtle distinctions are key to then understand relationships, how they're designed to work, what the container functions, and then whether it weaves energetically properly or not. And that, again, will either be built on a foundation of love or built on a foundation of fear. And so though there's conditions to making a relationship work, a relationship is not automatically reflective of love, but right. You can have the relationship that has those conditions that's still built on love because, again, love would be the, you know, like, for instance, if my son, cool, you want to do these things, then make sure you clean your room, do these things, right? Those are conditions. Those are agreements we're making. But it's not, if you want to live in this house, you got to do these things or you're out on the street, right? It's like, you are my son. This is, you know, I'm in my charge. I'm taking care of you regardless, right? And so it's just knowing the distinctions of that reflect what a love-based relationship is and what a fear-based relationship is, and then the way that agreements and conditions weave in that. But love itself is always unconditional.
I love it. Reminds me of just last night, I made butternut squash ravioli and my kids hated it. And I was thinking in my head, like, the same thing, single mom. I think, Kevin, you know, like, I got my kids full-time, private school. And I'm sitting there thinking, like, this is in my head. I didn't say it out loud. Like, something was going on, but I was like, this is the most thankless job. You guys will never know. I hope one day you have children of your own. So one day, I mean, my whole relationship with my mom and my parents really changed when I had my own kids because I realized, oh my God, you did this for me?
Yeah.
But anyway.
So all the things they don't know that we do, right, for them.
That's it. Wild.
Yeah.
And for me, unfortunately, at times, especially when I'm stretched, it does feel a little thankless. Now, I wouldn't change it. I wouldn't have it any other way. I signed up for this on so many levels. I'm so sure. And I'm grateful. They're incredible. Okay. But I want to go back to something you said. You said sometimes we do this thing, avoidance of self through like partnership, like through just looking so we don't have to be alone. And I, you know, my belief, I don't you can tell me if this is truth or not, but my perspective is that, you know, there are things that we can learn when we're in relationship with someone that we can't really on our own. And there's things that we can't learn about ourselves, the world, when we're in relationship, unless like we're alone. So you said this thing about avoidance of self through getting a relationship. Do you think that there's potentially an avoidance of self through staying single or staying out of relationship?
100%. Absolutely. Yeah. Avoidance can happen in all directions.
Michael just found another growth edge.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And that's why, while I teach people in the practice, I'll tell them, I said, remember that growth does not automatically represent how much you can achieve or require through action, right? In terms of external approaches. If you're someone who does a lot, then your growth edge is to sit the fuck down and be still, right? If you're always around people and you love it, your growth edge is actually to take time for yourself. If you're someone that takes time for themselves and loves their alone time, your growth edge is ensuring you also still connect with others. And this is a perfect example of comprehensive living. This is one of the references for that I mentioned a moment ago in reference to creation itself. Life is designed to be comprehensive, and the relationship sequence of life is first our relationship to source, the thing that created us. The second is the relationship to self, for us to recognize what it means to be a sovereign expression of source. And then the third is all the relationships beyond us. And so for us to live comprehensively, it is paramount that we take time for us and take time to acknowledge the thing that created us, and then also to be in relation to others. Mm-hmm. And so that's the sequence. You just want to know the intention of how you're moving to know if my being around others to honor that aspect of my life, or am I being around others because I'm really struggling to be with myself. Mm-hmm. And then the same is in reverse. Am I taking this time for me to really be with me, or am I taking this time with me because I don't like the discomfort or awkwardness I feel when I'm around people, and I'm choosing not to work through that to live more authentically embodied. And so any avoidance and neglect are the two ways we perpetuate any misalignment that we play out. Either, and the difference between that is avoidance is the conscious disregard of responsibility, and neglect is the unconscious disregard of responsibility. And so those are the two fundamentals that reflect whether we're perpetuating unhealthy, misaligned human behavior or not.
All right, I'm going to switch gears a little bit into this masculine feminine dynamics, because there's so much to uncover and get into here. And Kevin, I'm fascinated every time I hear you talk about this stuff. So to start, I would love if you could just give us a little reference point as to that we are not talking about gender here necessarily. So give us a little bit. You did something, your talk at Sacred Sons was so beautiful, the way that you framed this as it relates to masculine feminine energy, not relating to gender. Can you give us a little bit of, you know, the descriptor there as before we get into the more depths of this conversation, as we may be talking about male and female dynamics. But let's just like set the container that we are absolutely an inclusive, podcast over here. So what would you say to set the tone in that regard, please?
Yeah, for sure. I appreciate that. So yeah, when I teach the masculine and feminine, and I call it the masculine and feminine principle, because it's actually the principle of how energy works. And whenever I approach it in teaching, as you just mentioned, I always approach it from the principle so that people understand the foundational basis of literally what's governing the relationship of creation. And then what that looks like fractally when we experience it in an embodiment of physiology and sex first as an embodiment, a representation, and then what it means to have a gender and what that represents. When I first started teaching, I described it as masculine energy and feminine energy. And then the more I kept exploring it deeper with this access, I realized that's a misconception, and it actually hinders proper understanding, because it's not separate. They're never separate. They're never separate. They function as a unified relational whole. So the way that my first label of it, I call it the oneness energy dynamic. The oneness energy dynamic is the relationship of oneness that generates energy. So energy itself, this beautiful, vibrating, pulsating phenomena that we then experience life with and direct creativity with, is its vibrational mechanism is happening because of the dance of the principle of masculine and feminine inside it. So source ignites this principle relationship that is the relational reflection of what I call the alignment principle of command and surrender. And command and surrender is simply the centering and directional instruction of energy. And surrender is the permissible allowance for things to unfold energetically. That's the dance of life. All of us are sitting here with the ability to direct creative energy and allow it to unfold, to give it and receive it in interchange. And the whole structure of creation is built off of that functioning mechanism, which is why I call it the alignment principle. That would be how all of creation works and functions if we're not on some bullshit. That's how it works when we're in truth. So then the relational dynamic of that is the masculine and feminine principle. The masculine representing the command aspect, the feminine representing the surrender aspect. And then together, now you're witnessing how energy comes alive and vibrates. And so there's very specific traits, attributes, and qualities that each principle has that are designed to work together. And everyone has them all. And for us to live in our authentic embodiment, it's whatever the ratio is that reflects you being more authentically embodied. And so, and they're never 50-50 and they're never 100-0. Everyone always has both, and it's always whatever the optimal ratio is. So I will never be 100 masculine, 0 feminine, or 100 feminine, 0 masculine. I will be whatever ratio represents me as a baseline, and be me more naturally masculine led with my feminine intact, and then knowing situations that call for being more of my feminine and less of my masculine, and knowing how to weave between that. That's what we how we function. So in giving examples of that, traits of the masculine are assertiveness, aggression.
Wait. Hold on. Before you go here, I'm sorry to interrupt, because I thought that we could play this fun game that we did.
You play the game?
Yeah. Okay. So Claire, so Kevin's going to say a trait and you and I are going to determine whether or not we think it's masculine or feminine. Okay. Can we do that? I just think that will be fun for the audience to play along as well.
Yeah. Nice. Dope. All right. So I'll already just clarify. I already said assertiveness and aggression. So we now know those are masculine. And actually, I'll just match that real quick and then we'll do the qualities from here. So just to match that, a masculine is assertiveness, feminine is suggestiveness, masculine is aggression, feminine in principle is gentleness, right? So those two are there for each. Intuition?
Feminine. Yeah, I would say feminine.
Feminine indeed.
Okay, wait, and will you also tell us what the masculine counterpart is?
Yeah, for sure. So feminine intuition, and then masculine is the instinct, right? So our ability to actionable mechanisms, the masculine's instinct of that. Let's play with, actually, let's do play,
playfulness.
I'm
going to say feminine.
Feminine, indeed. And the counterpoint to playfulness in the masculine is responsibility. So when we're living harmoniously, we are keeping the playful, childlike essence of us alive and intact, the spontaneity of us, and held properly in consideration. So we're not reckless and getting ourselves all harmed. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Let's say deliberateness.
Deliberateness, I would say masculine.
Yeah.
Indeed. This is masculine. And so if masculine is the deliberateness, right, and we're operating that mechanism, then what the counterpart is in the nature of the feminine, when we think about it with deliberateness is, I want to say, what's more decisiveness in that? So the feminine of that would be, it's not critical, analytical. There we go. So the feminine is the, I don't want to give this away yet. Okay. So deliberate masculine.
Wait, it's juicy. Give it away.
It's good. Well, because I'm gonna use this as a trait to guess, because this is the one that usually stumps a lot of people. So I'll say this. There's a counterpart to deliberateness that is what makes this function properly for the feminine. I'm not gonna say this one yet because I'm gonna put this out here to guess. But I'll do another one right now. So discernment.
Masculine. Did you hear the question mark at the end?
Yes. Discernment is feminine. Discernment is feminine. And yeah, because discernment represents our ability to pick up on, and remember that receptivity is a part of the feminine, to pick up on the energetics of whether something feels solid or off to it, right? Now, the counterpart to that in the masculine is conclusiveness. And I use conclusiveness because I use judgment as the misaligned version of that. So the masculine, if the feminine is in discernment, it picks up on energy. The masculine is where we decide what we end up doing with that, right? Cool. So then what I'm going to do that formation is we'll move here. I'm going to label this like this and go like that. But the judgmental would be the misaligned version of that, where it's more condemning and it's disconnective and creates the above or below value judgment. Precision.
I want to say masculine.
Precision is feminine.
Is it?
Yeah. And that's the counterpart to deliberateness. So the masculine is deliberate and feminine is precision because it's about the details, right? And so it's being paid attention to all the little... right, details, accurate. And so it's why anyone in their feminine, especially in relational dynamics, why suddenly they can remember every accurate thing that was done.
Let me tell you, my husband is very, he remembers everything. He's very accurate. He's like attention to detail. I called him Groomzilla at our wedding because everything had to be just so. And I'm like, it's fine. So he's obviously
amazing. So he's got his,
He's feminine. That's why I went with that, because I'm like, not that I'm, you know, slap happy, but that's what I get from him so much more than me in terms of, attention.
But this is where I feel like so much misconception around masculine and feminine energy, we confuse with gender, right? Just because Mike is tapped into detail, he has, that's just part of his feminine traits, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I think that it's fair to say, like, Claire and I are both extremely driven, very ambitious. And I think there's a lot of Western women that have like a pretty strong developed masculine. And we talked a little bit about this at the end of your chat, Kevin, because you had mentioned something around like raising, I don't know if I just interpreted this or where we went in the conversation, but for me, it was like, you know, my kid's dad is in the picture, but they live with me full time unless I'm on the road. And so you had talked a little bit about like in the house, like kind of creating harmony, like where I have to sort of step in and be mindful of like kind of playing both roles, but I can't necessarily. It's so easy for me to go to this place of like, woe is me and I'm doing it all alone. And, you know, and instead like it's an ongoing thing. And my opportunity is to continue to call him up. It's not to continue to put him down, you know?
100%. Yeah, beautiful. And that's a part of you being in your feminine, the suggestiveness that invites the masculine to step into their embodiment, right? And that's part. And so you staying in your heart keeps you in the proper energetic to do that. Knowing that when there's situations that may call for your masculine, we want to live in the harmony of both so that you can weave through that effortlessly. But you're asking him to play his part, you know, effectively. And you're doing it without the judgment or the critical, hypercritical, overanalytical, like, and you don't do this, you do that. It's the invitation forward, because that's what it takes. The recognition that we're in this together, right? Even if we have things to work through, even if we have our own charges, right? Even if there's stuff that we're not peace with, our journey is, can we do the work that helps us meet each other properly? In truth. And so that's really big. Yeah. Well done.
Yeah.
Well done. What she stated, that if I can tell you how many times that happens when I start teaching this and like in a class, because I usually teach in co-ed spaces, and I'll say, you know, these aspects of the masculine, like in aggression, and a woman will stand up like, well, I have those too. And I go, that's why we're talking about it from the principle, because it's in all of us. Everyone's mind, they're so quick to go to man, woman, and not, oh, this stuff lives in all of us. So we all have these things at work, and it's how much to how much represents me in my most liberated state. So it's so important.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's interesting to me. My ex-husband used to call me the alpha male. And the question that I have for you is, can the ratio of the feminine and the masculine energy change as we evolve as humans?
Yes. And the key to it is understanding the proper ratio inside of you, the orientation you as an individual first, then what that looks like relationally. So for instance, if you are in the alpha male, right, being more masculine led, whenever I'm navigating with anyone, my first question is that what you're naturally led with, or did you condition yourself to be that, right? Which that happens more often than not. And then with your partner, is it the same? Are they naturally feminine led, or do they condition themselves in that way? Or are they so in their masculine that though you are also in your masculine, in his presence, you can soften, right? That all these things are questions that you want to navigate. And how you know whether you're operating in the version of you that is your natural design will be, the energy will tell you. When you tap into the natural design, your energy will increase. You'll generate more, you'll feel more alive, more free, just being in that. When you're in the other, you'll feel more tension or restriction, especially if there's a judgment to it, but mainly if it's something you've been doing that's taken a lot of effort, because the generating capacity is the misoriented. So then in a relational container, somebody's going to be in the masculine pole, someone's going to be in the feminine pole. Now in that container, you'll weave constantly, because life is life. And there's going to be situations that call for that dance to maneuver all the time. The question will always be, what's the fundamental baseline of the orientation of that relationship, right? Because if whoever is the natural feminine led one is going to want to be in that pole, who's ever the natural masculine is going to be in that pole, so that the framework is held properly. And then if there's no judgment to the principles within, then you'll weave when situations call for it.
Yeah.
And that's the ideal. That's the like the highest ideal we want to live into the embodiment of.
Yeah, that makes total sense. And actually, it kind of explains why he's my ex and now one of the many reasons, but it's, it became more confrontational, right? And I became less in my feminine, and I do have a lot of feminine traits. I know that not just from, you know, being a girly girl. I'm not talking about the physical. I know the softer side of me that makes up who I am. But I see a lot of those. So when I'm being a bit more hard in my marriage now, my husband is more of the softer feminine side. And so we managed to, you know, weave that together and get us back to where we need to be communication wise. That's why I just wonder, because sometimes I just feel like over the years, I feel like my energy has shifted a little bit, but maybe it's that I'm more in alignment with who I was always supposed to be. And previously I felt that it was more of a fight or flight, you know, self-protection element.
Which is usually what happens. When most women or men, whoever's most naturally feminine led, that condition themselves in their masculine, is because of pain points in their feminine they didn't know how to process and address. So they use their masculine to protect themselves, which will be a misalignment because you won't be functioning properly. Hmm. And then that's where when situations call for you to be soft, you won't be soft. You'll be like, you'll double down on the hardness. And if you're with someone who's masculine led, but not fully embodied in their dance of the feminine, that'll be this all fucking day.
Yeah.
You know, and then if you're with someone who's naturally masculine led while you're operating your conditioned masculine led and they're in contact with their feminine, they'll know how to meet you, turn their feminine on to bring you into a different space energetically, and then redirect their masculine to bring you back to your heart and softness. And it's a dope weaving, because I had to, you know, that's what I learned a lot in the embodiment of it with my son's mother and I. We like, she's masculine-led, I'm masculine-led, but hers was from the journey of her life because she's had some really interesting experiences. And so we would do this a lot. Mm-hmm. And then when I started to understand more of these insights and embodiment and started to tap in, I could, when we have certain conversations, I would understand how to play with both to bring us into a space where we can meet each other. And we have an amazing co-parentship now. It's exactly what I wrote down of, like, I love that I now have a peaceful, respectful, supportive, harmonious co-parentship with my son's mother. And we show up in these different ways and we do it. And it's been that, you know, we got to that place, and I had to make sure I addressed all of my stuff, right, to be able to hold the energy of that, to weave. And so that's why it's important to understand that how we have both. And going back to the part of the practice is knowing which piece when that supports, right, in communication and interaction and in our lives. Because even if you're, say, you're in a business that demands you being in your masculine more, is there areas in that business you can bring more of your feminine to it? Or do you have other areas in your life that allow you to be more in your feminine so you're harmonized more and not overtaxed, right? Knowing how to come home and click out of the masculine and the feminine to just be, you know, all of those are important aspects to weave it properly.
So let's talk about that a little bit of, like, say, you know, successful women in business, we could assert that they potentially have like a high developed masculine. You know, I know that I do can relate to that to a degree. So and I want to weave this in, maybe this is like a two-part question, because I've also heard you say that, you know, when we are in like a good balance or like we're weaving both well, you know, you have this probably attested theory, but this theory that like you need less sleep, you can do more. So I think about, right, like you have more energy. You kind of alluded to that a little bit earlier. So. Yeah. I mean, I don't actually know what my question is, more so that I'm just like kind of making an observation that I feel like, you know, I can get a good seven, ideally eight, but seven, mm-hmm. 8 hours of sleep. I'm probably operating predominantly in my masculine. Something that you just said recently is maybe when I'm actually in practice, like working in the business, I might bring a little bit more of my femininity there when I'm leading groups or seeing clients or, you know, in that more kind of like softer space, like as receiving whatever it is that is in front of me, whether it be a group or a person or, you know, whatever it is. But what's your perspective on, say, like ambitious women in business that are predominantly successful? How do you see that? If you had to make up what you think their sort of masculine, feminine makeup, energetic makeup is, how would you diagnose that, if you will?
I love it. So the culture we've created, especially Western culture, which is like, go be a go-getter, hustle, do your thing, right? Everyone wants to, whoever feels a call to be ambitious or like the way we've set up the infrastructure, it's predominantly masculine led, and that's also the misconception when people talk about like the patriarchy and matriarchy, which is a conversation we can have as well. But it's really just the fact that how we designed a lot of the infrastructure is based on masculine mechanics. If we built it with a greater understanding of the relational principle, we'd weave far greater institutions and industry and as a whole. And I'm even working with different groups where we're exploring how do you build these different things in a civilization from unity consciousness with this greater consideration. But so if in the case of what we've built, it's what has become familiar, so then people will function in it. And whenever, and I've worked with like really just the concept of boss women, right? And they're in CEOs, and I'm not a fan of that concept because I think it's a huge misconception of how they really want to be embodied. Because I've yet to meet a woman who's in that role, that dedicated to their masculine, that's naturally feminine led, that doesn't want to come home and take that off. You know, like they always want to be in a feminine, like, right? And so it's created a really fascinating culture, especially in Western society, where women who are naturally feminine but condition themselves in the masculine are so focused on the masculine way of being, but then wondering why they're not receiving a partnership the way they want it, because they're in more of their masculine. But not even just that, they don't know how to weave between their masculine and the feminine properly. So meaning they don't know when to turn their masculine off and shift into their feminine. So what I see a lot in the weaving of the culture is just a misunderstanding of what masculine and feminine is, and therefore underdeveloped muscles on how to weave in the beingness and the doingness properly. Because even in the masculine and feminine role, right, like the command and surrender, there's no separation to them. Because there's no separation to the masculine and the feminine. They're intertwined. Everything we do is a part of this dance. If I listen to what you're saying, I'm in my feminine. Then if I go to speak, to share information, I'm in my masculine. If I ask you a question in a way that's exploring with you and suggestive, I'm now speaking from a feminine place. If I'm more assertive and like directing a question and getting a direct answer, I'm now communicating. It's like that intertwined. I wake up and I have an idea. I'm tapping in through my feminine, receiving access. Then I do something with it, my masculine. It's that intertwined, even in the bodies. Like, I remember when I first brought this particular concept in women's circles, when I would get invited to women's circles a lot to bring these insights in, and also be like a masculine representation in these spaces. And I would break down this same thing of how fractally attuned it is so that people can get past the only attributing to men or women. And so part of what the masculine holds is the structural container and the foundation, the centeredness, and then the directionality of movement. That means that the womb within a female body structurally is the masculine container. The feminine is the cultivation of the being inside, the cultivated energy within the womb. And when I first brought that in, I'm like, because they just went right into man there. The womb is not man shit. And it was like, you're not hearing me. I see where you're going. Let's weave this. And once we weave through the charge that came up, then it was like, oh, I get it, because it's that intertwined. So if we live our lives thinking it's separate, we're so disconnected from ourselves. We're not living in a full scope of the harmony. And that's why I see it happen a lot in our society, where if a woman isn't really business-minded working in that spaces, but she's naturally feminine-led, she'll feel more exhausted and strained and not as energetically attuned all the time. And then when it comes to being, because what I've noticed also, and even my mom had to navigate this, where she was so in her masculine based on certain things in her upbringing that she conditioned herself that way, that anything just minorly representing feminine was seen as a weakness. And if I can tell you how many times that's happened when I work one-on-one with women that are in their masculine, is they've defined their feminine to be a weakness because the softer sides of us are different, and being openness is where like they experience hurt and pain, and not realizing that power, because and also power usually is attributed to masculine, but power is both, because power is life force energy. So life isn't happening without both, which makes feminine just as important and powerful as the masculine, because again, power doesn't exist without the relationship. So being able to weave this understanding, it was really fascinating having to support women come back to themselves in the feminine space, and then understand how to weave between both. And then as a result, their energy generate more. And now they stop reaching for coffee because they're naturally more energetically attuned, and they stop doing the things that they think they have to do to get more energy. Because when you're functioning in proper harmony, energy generates more effortlessly, because the truth is effortless and info. And when we're doing that, then you don't have to sleep as long. The things we usually have to do to recover can happen faster. And it's not so much about speed, but it's simply how much access you gain living properly designed. And then that even weaves differently with a woman's cycle, where because you're going through the process of the cycle, the energetics could demand a little more rest or a little more functionality. And then like we talked about in remembrance, but you experience your cycle according to the definition of it, your judgment about it, or your acceptance of it, or and if there's a narrative about the feminine, right? Like all these things will determine the way the cycle is experienced, and therefore how the energetics flow. And just like the way we process emotions or don't process emotions. So it's a really interesting thing to understand that how to weave through that, so that things aren't just automatic, where it's like, because I've had, you know, close friends of mine, female friends, where I supported them, helping them restore a more harmonious relationship to their cycle. And so then it wasn't painful anymore. And it wasn't like they weren't down for the count for days anymore, because their relationship improved with it. And so the energetics improved with it. And so all of these things make a difference for a greater energetic capacity and speed of restoration.
It's so interesting that you, like, I haven't had caffeine since remembrance.
Let's go.
I just gave it up. And I never even clicked. You know, we step into like the sober container when we're there, of which I honored. But for me, I was like, all right, I'm going to do the same thing with caffeine. And I just have no desire for it anymore. And I actually think I've lost weight, like, from, like, since having given it up. Anyways, so I really had no clue that, you know, maybe, Claire, some of those changes that you've seen in me are a little deeper than we even realized. What would you say, Kevin, to, and I know we'll start to kind of wrap it up here, but what advice or support would you give? I'm asking for a friend. What support would you give to someone who truly is, like, really working on their ability to receive more? Or just to receive, period.
Yeah. So what I would say to your friend is that being open to receive is creating opportunities to receive. So the fundamental aspect to life is, am I open and engaged at all times, right? That's the fundamental question. Am I living open to truth, open to life, openly receptive, openly generous on a regular basis? Do I stay open and engaged? If I don't know how to process pain points, I'll close. So our ability to know what we have to address in us, what fears, pain points, to ensure we stay more open to the wonderment and mystery of life is a foundational mechanism that supports receptivity. And that's as true for what we could call in and manifest as it is for even the information that comes through our senses. So if I struggle to receive light through my eyes when I have a migraine, and I start to make peace with certain aspects of myself, that will fade. And I can receive light through my eyes more effortlessly. Sounds, all of it. Things that people usually say, I'm so sensitive to this thing, is actually a misalignment. It means something's not receiving information properly. And so all the ways we could clean that up is knowing what to address to free up the space to be more open. And then on a foundational behavioral sense, I would say you start putting yourself in positions to receive. And that can be something as simple as when you go out, you can wait. If someone's walking with you the door, you can wait and allow them to open the door for you. Right, and receive. Or in a grocery store, and you can reach this thing on the aisle, but someone's standing there, and you can ask them, excuse me, would you mind grabbing that for me? You know, and because the thing about receiving, the thing about surrender, it doesn't mean we're incapable, right? It means we're allowing. And that's the important aspect of the feminine in its receptivity, is its allowance. And part of the issue with that is when people hear that concept of the feminine, cause it's also usually offered as submission, but I use submission as the misaligned version of that. But the surrender is there's no way to be in surrender without command. If you're not in command of the self and you surrender, you're actually in submission and acquiescing. And so for you to actually be open and receiving, that means you're centered in yourself and allow things to unfold. So even if you go out to eat and the waiter comes, what would you like? You start asking them, you know, what would you, on this day, right, the energy in this place, what would you recommend to me to receive? What do you think I would like? And then they might ask you questions. You go, yeah, well, I like things on the tender side. Do you think this would be a great option? You creating spaces to be more receptive to support, to information, right, to opportunity. All of these things help create the system to register a more open state of access and receptivity.
Spoiler alert, everyone, I was talking about myself.
Yeah.
And I will say that I'm part of this incredible group called the Association of Transformational Leaders. And I just found out that my friend George Kansas leads a group for men's work leaders, and Vince is a part of his group. I never knew that.
Amazing.
So I was having this conversation with George at our spring meeting a few weeks ago, and I was talking about how I'm really working on this idea of receiving more in my life. And I said that I think that I've had a misconception of receiving as taking, and I never want to, I can get emotional saying it, like I never want to be a taker. And he said, Emily, you can't take. And in that moment, like this light bulb for me went off that was like, what if I showed up in the world from the perspective of I can't be a taker? Like all the ways in which I'm like blocking out receiving in my life because I don't want to be a taker. Like what if I could show up from the perspective of like, I can't take, like I could only receive no matter what it is. And I'm just sharing that in case anybody else out there is listening if they have also or are maybe working on this edge or realize that this is an edge for themselves, that there is a perspective that I'm really working on in terms of like, what if I could show up and I could never take? I could never be a taker. And that is opening. I'm still working with it, but it's definitely like opening some more doors for me. So I really...
Yeah, you know what I would say to that is you already wouldn't lead with taking because you're considerate enough to ask. The fact that you're like, I don't want to be a taker means chances are you're not. Mm-hmm. Because you're already, that's already a concern for you. You know what I mean? Which means you're already considerate. And that's the difference. Because I guess I didn't mention this, but the masculine and feminine principle breaks down in the way it's designed to work, which is alignment, and then the misaligned version of it. And the misaligned version of it is when we are more either self-sacrificing or self-centered. And so you're only a taker if you're only getting for your own benefit, your own survival, your own consideration without the consideration of anybody else. Because for it to be receiving, it's understanding the reciprocation of the energetics of life. And if you're already considerate enough to not want to be a taker, then chances are you're not, you know, my foundationally. And so then you just make peace with anywhere you've judged yourself for where maybe you have been a little selfish. So you can make peace with that and then stay open and receptive to all that you are.
Claire, any final thoughts or questions?
No, I mean, we talked about this taker, receiving, and even, you know, for me, when I've worked with clients, even on a confidence level, and I can't receive compliments. We start as simple as that. It's like, just start by saying thank you, whether you believe it or want that praise or compliments, start by saying thank you. And eventually you'll start to believe it and you'll start to accept them. Right. So I was thinking what you said about grabbing something off the top shelf. And I used to go around the supermarket if I couldn't reach something, looking for something to stand on rather than ask someone. I didn't want to ask someone to help me.
You're masculine. Sure.
Now I'm like, I will ask for help all the time. I'm like, man or woman, teenager, you know, if you're taller than me, excuse me, please, can you help me with this? Yeah. Or, you know, I can't open the door because I can't figure out whether it's pull or push and it's stuck. Can you please help me? And they're like, hey, it's the wrong door. But, you know, hey, I asked for help. And it's the most, you know, it actually makes me feel good when I
100%.
Ask. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I just think, yes, I am receiving of that help. But at the same time, someone then walks away and goes, I helped that person today. I made that person feel good. That person smiled because I gave them a compliment. Like, even though you are receiving something, you're also giving something in return. Because I love 100%. To give. And I think it makes me feel good when I give. So I flip that, Em, as maybe a reframe that by receiving, it's actually giving something to somebody else in return.
Exactly. And that's the reciprocation. Because
people
love being helpful. You know what I mean? Like, I love doing shit for people. I love hold the door, do this stuff. I love it. Right. And so being able to honor that energy and then know what it means to receive. And I love that you brought in even receiving a compliment, that it's okay to receive an appreciative expression from someone. And what does that mean to just say thank you to it and be with it instead of push it back or think you have to send it back because you don't know how to just be seen and acknowledged? Yeah, so huge. So huge. I love your breath. But yeah, it's really big that because your act of receiving, and that's the relationship of command and surrender, right? You playing your part allows someone else to play theirs. That is part of the giving. And then that's hence why there's no separation.
That's a beautiful, beautiful example of where there is no separation and the reciprocity of the energies. All right, Kevin, tell everyone, where can they find you if they want more information or they want to follow along with your journey, keep, receiving your dope ass wisdom. Where can they find you?
So Instagram is the main social media platform I use. @SourceRadiance is the handle. And a lot of the updates, events, links I put on there. Also @TheLightBeings. We have the Light Beings community IG there too. I'm starting to record a bunch of content I'll be launching on my YouTube soon because a lot of stuff that's on there is just older stuff. Still potent, but older. And that's Source Radiance as well. And I'm currently updating my website. So the main two spaces to tune into, Instagram and YouTube, will be ways to get involved.
Amazing. Well, I hope everyone enjoyed this episode as much as I did. I know I will be listening to it again to continue to extract the wisdom. I want to thank you, Kevin, so much for being with us today and for sharing who you are and what you're up to and all of the gifts that you are here to, for all of us to receive from you. So thank you for that.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Kevin. This has been an amazing episode and I've got so many takeaways from this. So really, yeah, I couldn't agree with it more. Thank you so much for spending your time with us. We are truly grateful.
And we hope everyone, thank you. And we hope everyone listening enjoyed this episode. Stay tuned for more and we will see you next time. Ciao, ciao.
Yeah.